The Silent Guardian. Chapter 1. Shadows in the Quiet Town. The sound of rain drumming against the tin roof of Marcus Kane's repair shop was the only noise breaking the stillness of the evening. Outside, the streets were deserted, the storm driving everyone indoors. Inside the shop, Marcus worked silently, his rough hands steady as they tightened a wrench on a broken-down motorcycle. The air smelled of oil and damp earth, grounding him in the mundane rhythm of his life. For Marcus, the quiet life was deliberate. Every day was carefully constructed to keep the ghosts of his past at bay. No entanglements, no connections, no complications. The shop was his sanctuary, its walls a buffer against a world he no longer wanted to be a part of. But as the clock struck 8 and the rain intensified, Marcus heard something unusual, a soft knock on the glass door. It was hesitant, almost drowned out by the storm. He ignored it at first, assuming it was the wind or perhaps a stray branch blown against the building. But then it came again, this time louder, more deliberate. With a sigh, Marcus wiped his hands on a rag and walked to the door. Through the streaked glass, he saw the outline of someone, small, hunched, and shivering. He opened the door, the chill of the storm rushing in. Standing there was a teenage boy, no older than 16. His clothes were soaked, clinging to his thin frame, and his face was pale under a mop of wet, dark hair. But what caught Marcus's attention were the bruises, a purplish welt on the boy's cheek, a split lip, and a nervous flicker in his eyes. "Help me," the boy croaked, his voice trembling. Marcus's first instinct was to slam the door and retreat into the safety of his solitude. But something in the boy's expression, a mixture of fear and desperation, stopped him. Against his better judgment, he opened the door wider. "Come in," Marcus said gruffly, stepping aside. The boy hesitated, as if unsure whether he could trust the man towering over him. But the rain was relentless, and he had nowhere else to go. He stepped inside, dripping water onto the floor. Marcus gestured toward a wooden stool by the workbench. "Sit." The boy obeyed, his movements slow and stiff, as though every step hurt. Marcus grabbed a towel from a nearby shelf and tossed it to him. "What happened to you?" Marcus asked, keeping his tone neutral. The boy didn't answer immediately. He dabbed at his face with the towel, wincing as it touched his injuries. I got into some trouble." Marcus crossed his arms, leaning against the workbench. "Trouble doesn't usually leave marks like that. Who did this to you?" The boy hesitated, his gaze dropping to the floor. "Some guys," he muttered. "I don't want to talk about it." Marcus studied him, his sharp eyes taking in every detail. The boy's hands were shaking, his breaths uneven. This wasn't just a random fight. This was something deeper, darker. "You're not from around here," Marcus said. The boy shook his head. "I've been moving around." Marcus frowned. "You running from something?" The boy's silence was answer enough. For a long moment, neither of them spoke. The storm raged outside, the rain hammering against the roof. Finally, Marcus pushed off the workbench and walked to the small kitchenette in the corner of the shop. He poured a mug of coffee and set it on the table in front of the boy. "Drink that. You'll catch your death otherwise." The boy muttered a quiet thanks and wrapped his hands around the mug, letting the warmth seep into his fingers. Marcus returned to his spot by the workbench, watching him closely. The boy reminded him of someone, someone he'd tried hard to forget. Memories stirred, uninvited and unwelcome. He clenched his jaw, forcing them back. "I'm Marcus," he said finally. The boy glanced up. "Mike," he replied. "Mike Carter." "Well, Mike Carter, you're going to have to tell me what kind of trouble you're in. Otherwise, I can't help you." Mike hesitated, his eyes darting to the door as if he was considering bolting. But then he sighed, a sound heavy with resignation. "It's not my trouble," he said quietly. "It's my brother's." Marcus raised an eyebrow. "Your brother?" Mike nodded. "He owed some people money. Bad people. When he couldn't pay, they came after me instead. The pieces began to fall into place." "Mobsters?" Marcus asked, his voice hardening. Mike didn't answer, but the look in his eyes confirmed it. Marcus exhaled slowly, the weight of the boy's words sinking in. He'd been around long enough to know the kind of people Mike was talking about. Dangerous, ruthless men who didn't think twice about hurting anyone who crossed them. Men Marcus had spent years trying to forget. "You can't stay here," Marcus said bluntly. "If they're after you, you'll bring trouble with you." Mike's face fell. "I didn't know where else to go," I thought maybe you could help me. The vulnerability in his voice cut through Marcus's defenses. He wanted to turn the boy away, to send him out into the storm and pretend he'd never knocked on his door. But he couldn't. Not when he saw the fear in his eyes, the bruises on his face. Not when he remembered the promises he'd made long ago, promises he'd tried to bury. "Stay here tonight," Marcus said finally. "We'll figure something out in the morning." Mike's relief was palpable. "Thank you." As the boy settled into an old cot in the corner of the shop, Marcus sat in the dim light, his mind racing. He had spent years building this quiet life, hiding from the man he used to be. But as he looked at Mike, he knew the past wasn't done with him. Not yet. And this time, he wouldn't be able to walk away. Chapter 2. A Past That Lurks in Silence. Morning arrived slowly, the storm having left the town drenched and cloaked in a gray mist. Inside the shop, Marcus Kane awoke with a start. The faint rustle of movement reminded him that his once solitary sanctuary was no longer just his. Mike was already up, perched on the edge of the cot and nervously fiddling with the straps of his backpack. "Did you sleep?" Marcus asked, his voice rough from the night's quiet contemplation. Mike shrugged without looking up. "A little." Marcus nodded, walking past him to the small kitchenette. As he brewed coffee, his thoughts wandered. It had been years since someone else had occupied his space. Even though Mike was just a teenager, his presence was a disruption to the carefully curated quiet Marcus had relied on for survival. "You hungry?" Marcus asked, breaking the silence. "Yeah, I guess," Mike said hesitantly. Marcus placed a plate of toast and scrambled eggs on the counter. Mike eyed it like he hadn't eaten in days, mumbling a quick, "Thanks," before digging in. As the boy ate, Marcus leaned against the counter, crossing his arms. "You've got two choices," he said plainly. "You can tell me exactly what's going on, or you can leave now and take your chances." Mike froze mid-bite, his fork hovering in the air. Slowly, he set it down, his shoulders slumping. "I told you last night, it's about my brother," he said. "You told me a piece of it," Marcus replied. "But you left out the important parts. Who's after you? What do they want?" Mike sighed deeply, his voice barely above a whisper. "They call themselves the Merino Crew. They run a lot of stuff, gambling, drugs, loan sharking. My brother, David, borrowed money from them to cover some debts. He thought he could pay it back, but he couldn't. When they came for him, he skipped town. And they came after you instead," Marcus finished. Mike nodded. "I thought if I stayed under the radar, they'd leave me alone. But they found me a few days ago. Said I had a week to come up with the money or—" His voice trailed off, and he swallowed hard. "Or they'd make an example out of me." Marcus's jaw tightened. He could see the fear etched in the boy's face, and it stirred something inside him, something he'd tried to suppress for years. "How much does your brother owe?" Marcus asked. "5,000, Mike said bitterly. "Might as well be 5 million. I don't have anything." Marcus exhaled slowly, his mind racing. He'd dealt with men like the Merino Crew before, back in the life he'd abandoned. They didn't make idle threats. If Mike didn't pay, they'd follow through. Brutally. "Do they know where you are?" Marcus asked. Mike shook his head. "I don't think so. I've been moving around, trying not to stay in one place too long." Marcus studied him for a long moment. The kid was scared, alone, and in way over his head. And as much as Marcus wanted to stay uninvolved, he knew he couldn't. "Not this time." "Finish your food," he said finally. "We've got work to do." For the next several hours, Marcus put Mike to work cleaning up the shop. It gave the boy something to do and gave Marcus time to think. He didn't know much about the Merino Crew, but he knew their type. If they thought they could get to Mike, they wouldn't stop until he was either broken or dead. The only way to protect the kid was to send a clear message: back off. But doing that meant breaking every rule Marcus had lived by for the past 10 years. It meant stepping back into the darkness he'd fought so hard to escape. By mid-afternoon, Marcus had made up his mind. "We're going out," he said, grabbing his leather jacket. Mike looked up from the broom he'd been using to sweep the floor. "Where?" "To get some answers." They drove in silence, Marcus behind the wheel of his battered truck and Mike staring nervously out the window. Marcus had a destination in mind, a bar on the outskirts of town that served as a meeting place for low-level criminals. If the Merino crew had a presence in the area, someone there would know. The bar was everything Marcus expected, dimly lit, smoky, and reeking of stale beer. As he walked in, heads turned, sizing him up. Marcus ignored them, his focus on the bartender, a wiry man with a scar running down his cheek. "What'll it be?" the bartender asked, his tone disinterested. "Information," Marcus replied, sliding a $100 bill across the counter. The bartender's eyes flicked to the money, then back to Marcus. "Depends on what you're asking." "I need to know about the Merino crew," Marcus said, his voice low but firm. "Who runs them, where I can find them?" The bartender hesitated, glancing around the room. "You don't want to mess with those guys," he said finally. "Just tell me what I need to know," Marcus said, sliding another bill across the counter. The bartender sighed, pocketing the money. "Sal Merino's the boss. Runs things out of the old steel mill across town. But if you've got a problem with them, you're better off walking away. Those guys don't play nice." Marcus didn't respond. He'd already made up his mind. Back in the truck, Mike looked at him nervously. "What now?" "Now we make sure they understand you're off limits," Marcus said, his voice cold. Mike's eyes widened. "You can't just go after them. They'll kill you." Marcus's lips curved into a grim smile. "They can try." That night, Marcus sat alone in his shop, cleaning a blade he hadn't touched in years. The weapon felt heavy in his hands, not because of its weight but because of what it represented, a part of himself he thought he'd buried. As he prepared for what was to come, he thought about Mike and the choice he'd made. He could have turned the boy away, let him fend for himself. But deep down, Marcus knew that wasn't who he was. No matter how much he wanted to believe otherwise, he wasn't a man who could walk away. By the time the sun set, Marcus was ready. The quiet life he'd built for himself was over. In its place, the hunter had returned. And the Merino crew would never see him coming. Chapter 3: Unearthing the Beast. The old steel mill loomed like a forgotten relic on the edge of town, its rusted walls and shattered windows a testament to its abandonment. But Marcus Kane knew better. Inside those decaying walls, the Merino crew had set up their operations, a fortress of crime hidden in plain sight. The truck idled a block away, its engine humming softly as Marcus surveyed the mill through a pair of binoculars. The lot was bustling with activity despite the late hour. Men moved in and out, unloading crates from trucks, their shadows long in the dim glow of floodlights. Guards with rifles patrolled the perimeter, their breath visible in the cold night air. Beside him, Mike shifted nervously in his seat. "You're not seriously thinking about going in there, are you?" Marcus lowered the binoculars and glanced at the boy.
"Moment.
I'm not thinking about it. I'm doing it." Mike's eyes widened. "That's suicide. There's like 20 guys in there, maybe more." Marcus smirked faintly. "Then they're going to need more guys." Mike opened his mouth to argue but stopped when he saw the look in Marcus's eyes. It wasn't anger or recklessness, it was something colder, more calculating. Mike didn't know what Marcus's past entailed, but in that moment, he realized the man was no ordinary mechanic. "What if you get caught?" Mike asked, his voice quieter now.
"I won't," Marcus said simply.
"Stay here.
Lock the doors. If I'm not back in an hour, you drive to the sheriff's station and tell them everything."
Mike hesitated but eventually nodded.
"Okay."
Satisfied, Marcus stepped out of the truck, the night air biting against his skin. He adjusted his leather jacket, ensuring it covered the weapons concealed beneath. His movements were methodical, practiced, as if he'd done this a thousand times before. The fence surrounding the mill was old and riddled with gaps, making it easy for Marcus to slip inside. He moved like a shadow, silent and deliberate, his boots barely making a sound on the gravel. Every step brought him closer to the heart of the operation and to the men who had terrorized Mike. The first guard never saw him coming. Marcus emerged from the darkness,
one hand clamping over the man's mouth while the other drove a blade into his side. The guard crumpled without a sound, and Marcus dragged his body into the shadows. Two more guards patrolled the eastern side of the mill. Marcus waited until they passed his hiding spot, then sprang into action. He took the first man out with a swift strike to the neck, his movements precise and efficient. The second guard barely had time to react before Marcus delivered a brutal elbow to his temple, rendering him unconscious. Within minutes, Marcus had neutralized the outer perimeter. He paused to assess his next move, his eyes scanning the building for weaknesses. The main entrance was too risky, too many eyes, too much activity. Instead, he circled to the back, finding a service door partially obscured by a stack of crates. Inside, the mill was a maze of narrow corridors and cavernous rooms, the air thick with the stench of oil and rust. Marcus moved quickly but cautiously, his senses on high alert. He passed rooms filled with crates of contraband, drugs, weapons, counterfeit cash, all evidence of the Merino crew's reach. As he rounded a corner, he heard voices. Two men stood near a table piled with money, laughing and counting stacks of bills. Marcus didn't hesitate. He stepped into the room, his pistol silenced, and fired two shots in quick succession. The men dropped instantly, their laughter replaced by silence. Marcus moved to the table and pocketed a few wads of cash. It wasn't about the money, he had no use for it. But he knew it would hurt the Merino crew, and that was all that mattered. Deeper into the mill, Marcus found what he was looking for, an office at the center of the building, its windows glowing with light. From his hiding spot, he could see Sal Merino inside, pacing and barking orders into a phone. The man was in his 50s, heavy-set but imposing, with a cigar clenched between his teeth. Marcus's pulse quickened. Sal was the key to ending this. Taking him out wouldn't just protect Mike, it would dismantle the entire operation. But getting to him wouldn't be easy. The office was surrounded by men, each armed and ready for a fight. Marcus retreated to a storage room nearby, his mind racing as he formulated a plan. He rummaged through the shelves, finding a stash of gasoline cans and industrial tools. A faint smile tugged at his lips. If Sal wanted a fight, Marcus would give him one. The explosion rocked the mill, flames erupting from a storage area and sending men scrambling. Alarms blared, and chaos erupted as workers and guards alike tried to contain the fire. In the confusion, Marcus slipped through the corridors, using the smoke and noise as cover. When he reached the office, the guards outside were distracted, shouting orders into their radios. Marcus dispatched them quickly, his blade slicing through the smoke-filled air. He kicked open the door, his pistol raised, and stepped inside. Sal Merino spun around, his cigar falling from his mouth. "Who the hell are you?" he demanded, his voice a mixture of anger and fear. "Your worst mistake," Marcus said coldly. Sal reached for a gun on his desk, but Marcus fired first, the bullet grazing Sal's hand and sending the weapon clattering to the floor. Marcus closed the distance between them, grabbing Sal by the collar and slamming him against the wall. "This ends tonight," Marcus growled. "You leave the kid alone, or I'll come back and finish what I started." Sal sneered, blood trickling from his lip. "You think you can just walk in here and threaten me? Do you know who I am?" "I don't care who you are," Marcus said, his voice low and menacing. "But you're going to learn who I am." With one final punch to Sal's gut, Marcus released him, letting the man collapse to the floor. He turned and walked out, the flames and smoke swallowing the room behind him. Back at the truck, Mike was waiting, his eyes wide with relief when he saw Marcus emerge from the shadows. "What happened?" Mike asked. Marcus climbed into the driver's seat, his face grim. "They got the message." As they drove away, Marcus knew the fight was far from over. Sal Merino wouldn't back down easily, and the Merino crew wouldn't forget the man who dared to challenge them. But Marcus didn't care. For the first time in years, he felt alive. And he wasn't going to stop until justice was served. Chapter 4. First Strike. The quiet hum of the truck's engine filled the air as Marcus drove through the dimly lit streets, his knuckles gripping the steering wheel tightly. Mike sat in silence, occasionally sneaking glances at the man who had just walked into the lion's den and come out alive. The team couldn't tell if Marcus was a hero or something far more terrifying. Finally, Mike broke the silence. "So, what now? Are they going to come after us?" Marcus didn't answer immediately. His eyes remained fixed on the road, his mind already strategizing the next steps. When he finally spoke, his voice was calm, deliberate. "They'll retaliate. It's how men like Sal Marino operate. But we won't wait for them to make the first move." Mike frowned. "What does that mean?" Marcus glanced at him briefly. "It means I'm going to hit them before they have the chance to regroup. If they want a war, I'll give them one. But on my terms." The weight of Marcus's words hung heavy in the air. Mike shifted uncomfortably in his seat. "Why are you doing this? You don't even know me." Marcus's jaw tightened. He didn't answer. How could he explain that this wasn't just about Mike? It was about redemption, about confronting the part of himself he had tried so hard to bury. Protecting Mike wasn't just an act of kindness, it was a chance to atone for all the lives he hadn't been able to save before. The next morning, Marcus prepared for the next phase of his plan. The attack on the steel mill had been a warning, but it wasn't enough to cripple the Marino crew. He needed to hit them where it hurt, in their pockets. He spent the day gathering supplies, a duffel bag filled with tools, a burner phone, and a set of forged license plates. Mike watched from the corner of the shop, a mixture of curiosity and apprehension on his face. "What are you planning to do?" Mike finally asked. Marcus didn't look up from his preparations. The Marino crew's strength comes from their money. Drugs, gambling, extortion, it all funnels back to Sal. If I can disrupt their cash flow, I can weaken them. Mike crossed his arms. "And how do you plan on doing that?" Marcus zipped up the duffel bag and slung it over his shoulder. "By making sure they can't collect a dime." That night, Marcus made his move. The Marino crew's main cash drop was a warehouse on the outskirts of town. Marcus had learned this during his time at the steel mill, overhearing guards talking about the operation. It was a high-security location, but Marcus thrived in environments like this. Years of covert operations had honed his skills, and he knew how to exploit every weakness. He parked his truck a few blocks away and approached the warehouse on foot, sticking to the shadows. The building was surrounded by chain-link fences topped with barbed wire, and armed guards patrolled the perimeter. Marcus observed their movements carefully, noting their patterns and blind spots. When the moment was right, he struck. The first guard fell silently, Marcus's blade slicing through the air with deadly precision. He dragged the body into the shadows and moved on to the next. By the time he reached the fence, three guards were down, and no one had sounded the alarm. Marcus scaled the fence effortlessly, landing on the other side without a sound. He crouched low, blending into the darkness, and made his way toward the warehouse. Inside, the warehouse was a hive of activity. Men loaded crates of drugs and cash onto trucks, their voices echoing in the cavernous space. Marcus stayed hidden, his eyes scanning the room for his target, a large safe tucked away in an office at the far end of the building. Getting to the safe would require a distraction. Marcus pulled a small device from his duffel bag, a homemade incendiary charge, and set it on a timer. He placed it near a stack of crates labeled explosive and retreated to a safe distance. When the charge detonated, the explosion shook the building, sending a fireball into the air. The men inside panicked, shouting orders and scrambling to contain the fire. Marcus used the chaos to his advantage, slipping through the shadows and into the office. The safe was massive, its steel door reinforced and bolted to the floor. But Marcus had come prepared. He pulled out a small drill and a set of lockpicking tools, his hands working quickly and efficiently. Within minutes, the safe was open, revealing stacks of cash and ledgers detailing the Marino crew's operations. Marcus didn't hesitate. He stuffed the cash into his duffel bag, ensuring to grab the ledgers as well. The information they contained would be invaluable: names, locations, and evidence that could expose the crew's entire operation. As he turned to leave, he heard footsteps approaching. A guard burst into the office, his gun drawn. Marcus reacted instinctively, disarming the man with a swift motion and knocking him unconscious with the butt of his pistol. By the time the fire was under control, Marcus was long gone. He returned to the truck, the duffel bag heavy with the stolen cash and ledgers. Mike was waiting inside, his eyes widening when he saw the bag. "Did you rob them?" Mike asked incredulously. Marcus started the engine, his face unreadable. "It's not about the money," he said. "It's about leverage." Mike frowned. "Leverage for what?" "For making sure Sal Marino never hurts anyone again," Marcus replied. Back at the shop, Marcus spread the ledgers across the workbench, his sharp eyes scanning the pages. The documents revealed more than he had hoped for: bank accounts, shell companies, and names of corrupt officials on Sal's payroll. With this information, Marcus could dismantle the Marino crew piece by piece. But as he worked, a nagging thought crept into his mind. This fight wasn't just about Mike anymore. It was about justice. About taking down a system that preyed on the weak and innocent. And for the first time in years, Marcus felt a sense of purpose. Chapter 5. The Enemy Responds. The morning sunlight filtered through the shop's windows as Marcus Kane leaned over the ledgers spread across his workbench. He had barely slept, his mind consumed with deciphering the intricate web of connections that bound the Marino crew's operations. Each name, account, and location in the documents was a thread leading to Sal Marino's criminal empire, and Marcus intended to unravel it all. Across the room, Mike watched in awe as Marcus worked, the boy still grappling with the events of the previous night. "You really know how to do this," Mike said, breaking the silence. "Like, you're a pro or something?" Marcus didn't look up. "I've done things like this before." Mike hesitated, sensing there was more to the story. "What kind of things?" Marcus paused, his pen hovering over a page of notes. "Things I'm not proud of." The curt reply was enough to shut down the conversation, and Mike fell silent. But his curiosity about Marcus's past only grew. By mid-afternoon, Marcus had a plan. The documents revealed several key locations tied to the Marino crew's operations, including stash houses, distribution hubs, and meeting points for their inner circle. Each location represented a piece of the puzzle, and Marcus intended to dismantle them one by one. But he wasn't the only one preparing for a fight. At the Marino crew's headquarters, a sprawling mansion hidden behind high walls on the edge of the city, Sal Marino seethed with rage. The events of the past two nights had left him humiliated and furious. First, the attack on the steel mill. Then, the fire at the warehouse. And now, he was missing a significant amount of cash and sensitive documents. Sal slammed his fist onto his desk, sending a glass of whiskey toppling onto the floor. "Who the hell does this guy think he is?" he roared. Across the room, his lieutenant, Vince Moretti, stood with his arms crossed. Vince was a towering figure with a reputation for brutality, his scarred face a testament to years of violence. "Whoever he is, he's not some amateur," Vince said. "He's hitting us where it hurts." Sal's eyes narrowed. "I want him found. I want his head on a damn platter." Vince nodded. "We'll send a message. Make him understand what happens when you mess with us." Sal lit a cigar, the flickering flame illuminating his hardened features. "Start with the kid. If this guy's protecting him, it means he's important." Marcus's first target was a stash house located in a dilapidated neighborhood on the outskirts of town. According to the ledgers, the house was used to store drugs and launder money, making it a crucial link in the Marino crew's operations. He arrived under cover of darkness, parking his truck a few blocks away and approaching the house on foot. Through a pair of binoculars, he observed the guard stationed outside, two men armed with shotguns, their posture relaxed as they smoked and chatted. Marcus smirked to himself. Amateurs. Moving silently, he crept around the side of the house, using the shadows to his advantage. He disabled a security camera with a flick of his knife and climbed through an open window on the second floor. Inside, the house was a chaotic mix of luxury and decay. Expensive furniture clashed with peeling wallpaper and cracked floors. Marcus could hear voices downstairs, men laughing and shouting as they played cards. He ignored them, focusing on his mission. The stash was located in a locked room on the second floor. Marcus picked the lock with ease, his movements swift and efficient. Inside, he found shelves stacked with bricks of cocaine and duffel bags stuffed with cash. He placed a small incendiary device in the center of the room, set the timer for 5 minutes, and slipped out. As he exited the house, the explosion rocked the building, sending flames and smoke billowing into the night sky. Marcus disappeared into the darkness, his work done. The retaliation came the next morning. Mike was sweeping the shop floor when the sound of screeching tires drew his attention. He looked up just in time to see a black SUV barreling toward the building. Before he could react, the vehicle skidded to a stop, and four men jumped out, guns drawn. "Get down!" Marcus shouted, shoving Mike behind the counter as the first shots rang out. Bullets shattered windows and sent tools flying, the deafening noise echoing through the shop. Marcus grabbed a shotgun from beneath the counter and returned fire, his shots precise and calculated. One of the attackers fell, clutching his chest as he crumpled to the ground. The others scrambled for cover, firing wildly in Marcus's direction. Mike huddled behind the counter, his hands over his ears as the gunfight raged around him. He had never seen anything like this, never imagined that someone like Marcus, a man who had seemed so calm and detached, could unleash such ferocity. Within minutes, the attackers were either dead or fleeing. Marcus lowered his weapon, his breathing steady despite the chaos. He stepped outside, scanning the street for any remaining threats. The SUV was gone, leaving behind a trail of blood and shattered glass. Mike emerged cautiously, his face pale. "What the hell was that?" he demanded. "Sal's response," Marcus said grimly. "He's getting desperate." Mike looked around at the damage, his eyes wide. "This is insane. They're going to keep coming, aren't they?" Marcus nodded. "Until we stop them?" As the sun set that evening, Marcus stood in the wreckage of his shop, his mind racing. The attack had been a warning, a sign that Sal Marino wasn't going to back down without a fight. But Marcus wasn't afraid. If anything, the attack had only strengthened his resolve. He turned to Mike, who was helping clean up the mess. "You okay?" Marcus asked. Mike nodded, though his hands were still shaking.
"Yeah,
I think so." "Good," Marcus said. "Because things are about to get worse before they get better." Mike frowned. "What do you mean?" Marcus's expression hardened. "I mean it's time to take this to the next level. Sal Marino thinks he can scare us into submission. He's wrong." As he spoke, Marcus began packing a bag with weapons, supplies, and the ledgers he had taken from the warehouse. The fight was far from over, but Marcus knew one thing for certain: he wasn't going to let Sal Marino win. Not this time. Chapter 6: The Demon Within. The night was still as Marcus sat at the edge of his bed, a bottle of whiskey in one hand and the faint glow of a nearby lamp casting long shadows across the room. The events of the day replayed in his mind like a film stuck on loop: the roar of gunfire, the shattering of glass, and the terrified look on Mike's face. For years, Marcus had worked to bury the part of himself that thrived on violence, but now, it was clawing its way back to the surface. Across the room, Mike sat on the couch, watching Marcus silently. The teenager had questions, so many questions, but he was too afraid to ask. He could see something in Marcus's eyes, a darkness that both terrified and fascinated him. Finally, Mike broke the silence. "You've done this before, haven't you?" Marcus didn't answer immediately. He took a slow sip from the bottle, savoring the burn as it slid down his throat. When he spoke, his voice was quiet but heavy. "I've done a lot of things. Some I'm proud of. Most I'm not." Mike leaned forward. "Were you, like, in the military or something?" Marcus chuckled softly, a sound devoid of humor. "Something like that?" Mike frowned. "Why don't you just tell me? You keep acting like you're trying to protect me, but how am I supposed to trust you if I don't even know who you are?" Marcus set the bottle down, his expression hardening. "Trust isn't about knowing someone's past. It's about knowing what they'll do for you now. I'm keeping you alive, my—" "That's all that matters." Mike looked away, frustrated but unwilling to press further. He couldn't deny that Marcus had saved his life, but the man's evasiveness only deepened the mystery surrounding him. By morning, Marcus was already preparing for his next move. He knew the Marino crew wouldn't stop until they had either destroyed him or regained their control over the town. If he wanted to end this, he needed to hit them harder, make it impossible for them to recover. The ledgers he'd taken from the warehouse provided a wealth of information, but one entry stood out: a club in the city that served as a front for the Marino crew's high-stakes gambling operation. According to the documents, it was one of their most profitable ventures, pulling in tens of thousands of dollars each night. Taking it down would cripple their finances and send a message Sal Marino couldn't ignore. The club, aptly named the Crimson Cage, was a sleek, modern building nestled in the heart of the city. Its neon lights and pulsing music drew in a steady stream of high rollers, oblivious to the criminal enterprise operating behind the scenes. Marcus arrived just after midnight, dressed in a tailored suit that allowed him to blend in with the crowd. He had shaved and cleaned up, his rugged appearance transformed into that of a well-to-do businessman. Inside, the air was thick with smoke and the clinking of glasses. Roulette wheels spun, dice rolled, and cards were dealt as patrons reveled in the intoxicating mix of luxury and adrenaline. Marcus moved through the crowd with purpose, his sharp eyes scanning every corner of the room. He spotted his target near the back, a private lounge guarded by two men in suits. Behind those doors, the Marino crew conducted their real business, laundering money and negotiating deals. Marcus adjusted his cufflinks, his mind already calculating how to breach the fortress without drawing attention. The first guard fell without a sound. Marcus approached from behind, his hands moving swiftly to incapacitate the man with a chokehold. He dragged the unconscious body into a nearby storage room and retrieved the guard's keycard. The second guard barely had time to react before Marcus struck him with a single, precise punch to the jaw. He crumpled to the floor, and Marcus stepped over him, swiping the keycard to enter the lounge. Inside, the air was quieter, the hum of conversation replacing the noise of the main floor. Several men sat around a table counting stacks of cash, their laughter stopping abruptly when Marcus entered. "Who the hell are you?" one of them demanded, reaching for a gun. Marcus didn't give him the chance. In a blur of motion, he disarmed the man and slammed him against the wall, his voice cold and steady. "Tell Sal Marino his time is up." The other men scrambled to grab their weapons, but Marcus was faster. The room erupted into chaos as he dismantled them one by one, his movements efficient and brutal. When it was over, the floor was littered with groaning bodies, and the cash lay scattered across the table. Marcus took a lighter from his pocket, igniting a small stack of bills. The flames spread quickly, engulfing the table in seconds. As the fire consumed the room, Marcus walked out, leaving the chaos behind. The attack on the Crimson Cage sent shockwaves through the Marino crew. By morning, Sal Marino was furious, his calls to the club going unanswered. Vince Moretti stood in the corner of Sal's office, his expression grim. "This guy isn't stopping," Vince said. "He's tearing us apart, one piece at a time." Sal slammed his fist on the desk. "I don't care who he is or what he wants. Find him. I want him dead before the week is over." Vince hesitated. "We don't even know where he is. Every time we think we've got him, he's already gone." Sal's eyes narrowed. "Then we stop playing defense. Go after the kid. If this guy cares so much about protecting him, we'll use that against him." Vince nodded, a cruel smile spreading across his face. "Consider it done." Back at the shop, Marcus was tending to a broken engine when Mike approached him, holding a newspaper. "You're all over the news," Mike said, dropping the paper onto the workbench. The headline read, "Mysterious Vigilante Targets Criminal Empire." Below it was a grainy photo of Marcus exiting the Crimson Cage. Marcus frowned. "This isn't good." Mike crossed his arms. "No kidding. You're basically taunting them now." Marcus set down his tools, his gaze hardening. "They'll come after you next, Mike. That's their move." Mike swallowed hard. "What do we do?" Marcus placed a hand on his shoulder. "We stay ahead of them. And when they come, we make sure they regret it." As night fell, Marcus fortified the shop, preparing for the inevitable retaliation. But deep down, he knew this wasn't just about protecting Mike anymore. The fight had awakened something inside him, a part of himself he couldn't ignore. The demon within was no longer buried. And this time, Marcus was ready to unleash it. Chapter 7. A Line Crossed. The air inside the shop was heavy with tension. Marcus Kane stood by the window, peering out into the darkness, his sharp eyes scanning the empty street. He'd fortified the building as best he could, reinforcing doors, covering windows with steel panels, and positioning weapons strategically around the shop. But he knew better than to rely solely on defenses. The Merino crew wouldn't come to negotiate. They'd come to kill. Behind him, Mike sat on a stool, nervously fidgeting with a wrench. The teenager had grown quieter in the past few hours, the weight of the situation pressing down on him. Finally, he spoke, his voice barely above a whisper. "What if they find a way in?" "They'll find a way," Marcus said without turning around. "They always do." Mike's face paled. "Then why are we staying here? Shouldn't we run or—" "No," Marcus interrupted, his voice firm. "Running makes us prey. If we run, they'll keep hunting you down. They'll never stop. Here we make our stand. And when this is over, they'll never come after you again." Mike swallowed hard, nodding. He didn't fully understand the depth of Marcus's resolve, but he trusted him. He had to. The first sign of trouble came just after midnight. Marcus heard it before Mike did. A faint hum growing louder, the unmistakable sound of multiple vehicles approaching. He moved quickly, killing the lights in the shop and plunging the room into darkness. "Stay down," Marcus whispered, motioning for Mike to take cover behind the workbench. Mike obeyed, crouching low as the hum grew into a roar. Moments later, three SUVs screeched to a halt outside the shop, their headlights cutting through the darkness. Doors slammed, and the sound of boots hitting pavement followed. Marcus crouched by the window, his shotgun in hand. Through a gap in the steel panel, he counted at least a dozen men, all armed and moving with purpose. At the center of the group was Vince Moretti, his hulking figure unmistakable even in the dim light. "This is it," Marcus muttered to himself. Vince stepped forward, his voice booming. "Marcus Kane, we know you're in there. Come out and maybe we'll let the kid live." Marcus's lips curled into a grim smile. He leaned out just enough to respond. "You've got 10 seconds to leave, Vince. After that, I start taking you apart." Vince chuckled darkly. "You think you can take all of us? You're just one man." Marcus's smile widened. "That's all I need." The fight began with an explosion. Marcus had rigged a propane tank near the entrance to the shop, and as soon as Vince's men got close, he detonated it. The blast sent several of them flying, the force shaking the building and lighting up the night sky. Chaos erupted. The remaining men opened fire, their bullets ripping into the shop's exterior. Marcus stayed low, moving from cover to cover as he returned fire. Each shot was precise, every movement calculated. This wasn't a panic defense, it was a masterclass in survival. Mike huddled behind the workbench, his hands covering his ears as the gunfire roared around him. He wanted to help, to do something, but fear rooted him in place. "Stay down, Mike," Marcus shouted, his voice cutting through the chaos. Outside, Vince barked orders, his frustration growing. "Get in there. Flush him out." His men advanced cautiously, their weapons raised. But Marcus was ready for them. He moved like a ghost, disappearing into the shadows and striking when they least expected it. One by one, they fell, some to bullets, others to the traps Marcus had set around the shop. By the time the first wave was down, Vince had had enough. He grabbed an assault rifle from one of his fallen men and charged toward the building, his massive frame unyielding. "Kane, you think you're tough? Come out here and face me." Marcus stepped out of the shadows, his shotgun leveled at Vince. "You wanted me. Here I am." The two men stared each other down, the air between them crackling with tension. Vince grinned, his scarred face twisting into a sneer. "You're a dead man." "We'll see," Marcus replied coldly. Vince opened fire, the rapid bursts of his rifle tearing through the air. Marcus dove behind a stack of crates, narrowly avoiding the barrage. He returned fire, the blast of his shotgun forcing Vince to take cover. The fight was brutal, each man pushing the other to the limit. Vince was relentless, his sheer size and strength making him a formidable opponent. But Marcus was faster, smarter, and far more experienced. He used the terrain to his advantage, outmaneuvering Vince at every turn. Finally, Marcus found his opening. As Vince reloaded, Marcus charged forward, slamming the butt of his shotgun into the man's jaw. Vince staggered, blood spraying from his mouth. Before he could recover, Marcus delivered a powerful kick to his chest, sending him crashing to the ground. The remaining men, seeing their leader fall, began to retreat. Marcus didn't pursue them. He stood over Vince, his shotgun aimed at the man's head. "You lost," Marcus said, his voice calm but deadly. "Tell Sal Marino that if he comes after the kid again, I'll finish this." Vince glared up at him, his eyes burning with hatred. "You're making a mistake. Sal's going to kill you for this." Marcus didn't flinch. "Let him try." He stepped back, letting Vince crawl away. The man stumbled to his feet and limped toward one of the remaining SUVs, his pride and his crew shattered. As the vehicles disappeared into the night, Marcus lowered his weapon and let out a slow breath. The battle was over, but the war was far from won. Mike emerged from his hiding spot, his face pale and his hands shaking. Are they gone? "For now," Marcus said, his voice softer now. "But they'll be back." Mike hesitated, then asked the question that had been gnawing at him. "Why are you doing this? Why are you risking your life for me?" Marcus looked at him, his expression unreadable. "Because someone has to. And because I've already lost too much." Mike didn't press further. He simply nodded, a newfound respect for Marcus forming in his mind. As the first rays of dawn broke through the shattered windows of the shop, Marcus began preparing for the next battle. He knew Sal Marino wouldn't give up, and neither would he. The line had been crossed. And now, there was no turning back. Chapter 8, Retaliation and Revelations. The aftermath of the battle left the shop in ruins. Shattered glass crunched under Marcus's boots as he surveyed the damage. Bullet holes riddled the walls, tools were scattered across the floor, and a lingering scent of gunpowder hung in the air. Mike sat on the floor nearby, still shaken but alive, clutching a blanket around his shoulders. Marcus sighed, leaning his shotgun against the wall. "We can't stay here." Mike looked up, his face pale. "What do you mean? Where else would we go?" Marcus knelt beside him, his tone calm but firm. "They'll come back. Next time, they'll bring more men, and they won't leave until this place is leveled." Mike's hands trembled as he pulled the blanket tighter. "So what do we do?" Marcus's expression hardened. "We take the fight to them." The plan began to take shape as Marcus packed a duffel bag with weapons and supplies. The ledgers he had stolen from the Marino crew's warehouse had provided him with valuable information, locations of stash houses, safe houses, and even Sal Marino's personal compound. If he was going to end this, he needed to hit them where it hurt. "You're going after Sal, aren't you?" Mike asked, watching Marcus prepare. "Yes," Marcus replied without hesitation. "It's the only way to stop this." Mike frowned. "What if he kills you? What happens to me then?" Marcus paused, his gaze softening. "You'll be safe. That's all that matters." Mike shook his head. "I don't want to be safe if it means you die. You're the only one who's ever tried to help me." The sincerity in Mike's voice caught Marcus off guard. For a moment, he saw himself in the boy, a younger version of the man he used to be, desperate for guidance and protection. He placed a hand on Mike's shoulder. "I'm not planning on dying. But if it comes to that, you'll go to the sheriff. Tell him everything. Understand?" Mike nodded reluctantly.
"Okay."
Sal Marino's compound was a fortress, surrounded by high walls, surveillance cameras, and armed guards. Marcus spent hours scouting the area, studying the guards' patterns and identifying weak points in their defenses. He knew he couldn't rely on brute force alone. This would require precision and strategy. As the sun set, Marcus made his move. Dressed in black and armed to the teeth, he approached the compound from the rear, where the security was thinnest. He disabled the cameras with a well-placed EMP device, plunging the area into darkness. One by one, he took out the guards, his movements swift and silent. A knife here, a silenced pistol there, each strike was calculated, leaving no room for error. By the time he reached the main building, the perimeter was clear. Inside the compound, Sal Marino sat in his luxurious office, oblivious to the danger closing in. The room was adorned with expensive artwork, leather furniture, and a collection of fine whiskey. Sal reclined in his chair, puffing on a cigar as he reviewed reports from his lieutenants. The door burst open, and Marcus stepped inside, his pistol trained on Sal. "Good evening, Sal," Marcus said coldly. Sal's eyes widened in shock, but he quickly masked it with a sneer. So, you're the one causing all this trouble. I have to admit, I'm impressed. Not many people have the balls to come after me. Marcus didn't lower his weapon. This ends tonight. Sal chuckled, leaning back in his chair. You think killing me will change anything? You don't know how this world works. Cut off one head, and another grows in its place. I'm not just cutting off the head, Marcus replied. I'm burning the whole body. Sal's smirk faltered. What do you want? Money? Power? I can make you rich, give you anything you want. I want you gone, Marcus said, his voice like steel. Sal reached for a gun hidden under his desk, but Marcus was faster. He fired a single shot, hitting Sal in the shoulder and sending him sprawling to the floor. Don't, Marcus warned, stepping closer. You're not walking away from this. Sal groaned, clutching his bleeding shoulder. You think you're some kind of hero? You're just like me, a killer pretending to be something better. Marcus froze, the words hitting closer to home than he cared to admit. He had spent years trying to distance himself from his violent past, but here he was, knee-deep in blood once again. I'm nothing like you, Marcus said quietly. I don't hurt the innocent. Sal laughed bitterly. Keep telling yourself that. Before Marcus could finish the job, the sound of footsteps echoed down the hallway. Reinforcements. He had seconds to act. Grabbing a flash drive from Sal's desk, he retreated through the window, disappearing into the night as more guards burst into the office. Sal, still clutching his shoulder, shouted after him. You can't run forever, Kane. I'll find you. Back at the safe house, a small cabin Marcus had secured in the woods, Mike waited anxiously. When Marcus finally returned, bloodied and exhausted, the boy ran to him. Did you get him? Mike asked. Marcus shook his head. Not yet. But I got something better. He held up the flash drive, his eyes glinting with determination. This has everything we need to bring him down. Contacts, accounts, evidence. Once we leak this, Sal Marino's empire crumbles. Mike smiled faintly, a glimmer of hope returning to his face. So, this is almost over? Almost, Marcus said. But he knew the fight wasn't finished yet. Sal would retaliate, and when he did, Marcus would have to be ready. As Marcus sat down to examine the flash drive's contents, he couldn't shake Sal's words from his mind. Was he truly different from the man he was fighting? Or had he simply found a more noble way to channel the darkness within him? For now, those questions would have to wait. The battle wasn't over, and Marcus was prepared to see it through to the end, no matter the cost. Chapter 9: The Final Battle. The cabin in the woods felt unnaturally quiet as Marcus Kane reviewed the contents of the flash drive. The glow of the laptop screen illuminated his hardened features, his eyes scanning lines of text and spreadsheets that detailed every facet of Sal Marino's empire. Bank accounts, offshore investments, political bribes, and names of key allies, everything Sal needed to maintain his grip on power was laid bare. This is it, Marcus muttered. This is how we end him. Mike sat across the table, his nerves evident in the way he fiddled with a pen. So, what's the plan? Leak this to the cops. Marcus shook his head. The system's compromised. Half the officials on Sal's payroll wear badges. If we hand this over, it'll vanish before it does any damage. Mike frowned. Then what? Marcus leaned back in his chair, his mind racing. We destroy him from the inside. Make his allies turn on him, drain his resources, and leave him exposed. Once his empire collapses, he'll have no one left to protect him. Mike hesitated. And then what? Marcus's expression darkened. Then we finish it. The next morning, Marcus put the plan into action. Using the flash drive's information, he began sending anonymous tips to federal agencies, financial institutions, and even rival criminal organizations. Offshore accounts were frozen, shipments were seized, and alliances began to crumble. Sal Marino's empire, which had seemed untouchable days ago, was now in free fall. But Marcus knew Sal wouldn't go down without a fight. Sal Marino sat in his office, his desk cluttered with reports of his organization's unraveling. His face was pale, his usual arrogance replaced with a simmering rage. What the hell is happening? He barked at Vince Moretti, who stood uneasily by the door. It's Kane, Vince said. He's leaking everything. The feds are on us, our accounts are frozen, and the Colombians pulled out of the deal. Sal slammed his fist on the desk. That bastard. How does he know so much? Vince hesitated before answering. He took a flash drive from the compound. It had all our files. Sal's eyes narrowed. Then we hit him. I don't care what it takes. Find him and end this. Marcus anticipated the retaliation. He and Mike relocated to an abandoned factory on the outskirts of town, turning it into a fortress. Marcus spent hours rigging traps, setting up surveillance, and preparing for the inevitable showdown. This place looks like something out of a war movie, Mike said, watching as Marcus secured trip wires to the factory's entrances. It's not far off, Marcus replied. Sal's desperate. He'll throw everything he has at us. Mike frowned. Why are you still doing this? You could have left me weeks ago, gone back to whatever life you had. Marcus paused, his expression softening. I made a choice, Mike, to stand and fight. Not just for you, but for everyone Sal's hurt. If we don't stop him, no one will. Mike nodded, a mixture of fear and admiration in his eyes. Then I'm with you. Marcus smiled faintly. Good. Just stay out of the line of fire. The attack came at dusk. Marcus spotted the convoy of SUVs through the factory's surveillance cameras, their headlights piercing the twilight as they approached. He grabbed his radio, speaking to Mike, who was stationed in a secure room. They're here. Stay put. Mike's voice crackled through the radio. Be careful. Marcus loaded his weapons, a rifle, a shotgun, and a sidearm, before positioning himself near the main entrance. The first SUV burst through the gates, and Sal's men poured out, armed to the teeth. Marcus watched from the shadows, his finger hovering over a detonator. When the men moved into position, he pressed the button, and the ground erupted in flames. The explosion sent several of them flying, and chaos ensued. Sal Marino emerged from one of the vehicles, his face contorted with fury. Kane, come out and face me, you coward. Marcus's voice echoed through the factory, amplified by the building's acoustics. I'm right here, Sal. Sal turned, his eyes scanning the darkness. You think you can beat me? I've built an empire. You're nothing but a washed-up killer. Marcus stepped into the light, his rifle aimed at Sal. And I'm about to bury your empire. The firefight that followed was brutal and unrelenting. Marcus moved through the factory like a phantom, using the traps and his intimate knowledge of the terrain to his advantage. Sal's men fell one by one, their numbers dwindling as the battle raged on. Finally, it was just Marcus and Sal. The two men faced each other in the center of the factory, surrounded by the wreckage of the battle. Sal held a pistol, his hand trembling slightly. Marcus, bloodied but unbroken, stood with his shotgun at the ready. You're done, Sal, Marcus said. It's over. Sal laughed bitterly. You think killing me will change anything? Someone else will take my place. Maybe, Marcus replied. But it won't be you. Sal raised his pistol, but Marcus was faster. The shotgun roared, and Sal fell to the ground, clutching his chest as blood pooled beneath him. As the dust settled, Marcus walked back to the secure room where Mike was waiting. The boy's face lit up with relief when he saw Marcus, though the fear hadn't entirely left his eyes. Is it over? Mike asked. Marcus nodded. It's over. Mike hesitated. What happens now? Marcus looked out at the horizon, the first rays of dawn breaking through the factory's shattered windows. We start over. Clean slate. Mike smiled faintly. Together? Marcus glanced at him, his expression softening. Together. For the first time in years, Marcus felt a sense of peace. He knew the fight had left scars, both visible and invisible, but he also knew he'd made the right choice. Sal Marino's empire was in ruins, and the town was free from his grip. As he and Mike walked out of the factory, the rising sun casting its light on the aftermath of the battle, Marcus allowed himself a rare moment of hope. For the first time, the future didn't feel so bleak. Chapter 10: Legacy of a Guardian. The days that followed the final battle against Sal Marino felt strangely quiet. For the first time in weeks, the constant weight of danger had lifted, leaving an odd sense of emptiness in its wake. The factory, once a battleground, was now silent, its walls scarred with the evidence of a fight that would soon pass into legend among those who had witnessed Sal Marino's reign of terror. Marcus Kane and Mike Carter returned to the town under the cover of darkness. The streets were eerily empty, as if the world was still holding its breath, waiting for the next storm. But Marcus knew better. Sal Marino's empire had crumbled, and his lieutenants had either fled or been swept up in the chaos of federal investigations. For the first time, the town was truly free. In the weeks leading up to the final battle, Marcus had ensured that the evidence he'd taken from the flash drive reached the right hands. Anonymous tips to federal agencies had sparked investigations, and the fallout was immediate. The Marino crew's finances were frozen, their shipments intercepted, and their allies arrested. Without Sal at the helm, the organization fractured, leaving behind a power vacuum that no one was eager to fill. Back in the shop, Marcus worked quietly, repairing the damage from the earlier attack. It felt strange to return to the mundane rhythm of fixing engines and tuning motors, but it was the life he'd chosen, the life he wanted to reclaim. Mike, now a permanent fixture in Marcus's life, helped where he could. The teenager had grown over the past few weeks, his once nervous demeanor replaced with a quiet confidence. He looked up to Marcus, not just as a protector but as a mentor. "You think they're gone for good?" Mike asked one evening as they worked side by side. Marcus nodded. "The ones who mattered are either dead or behind bars. The rest are too scared to come back." Mike hesitated. "And what about you? What happens now?" Marcus paused, wiping his hands on a rag. "I keep going. This is my life now." Mike frowned. "You mean fixing bikes and engines? That's it?" Marcus smirked faintly. "It's enough." "But you could do so much more," Mike pressed. "You've got skills, skills that could help people." Marcus sighed, leaning against the workbench. "I've spent my life fighting. I didn't choose it, but it's what I became good at. Now I just want peace. For both of us." Mike nodded slowly, though he didn't look entirely convinced. "I guess I just don't want you to forget what you did for me." Marcus's expression softened. "I won't. And you won't either. That's what matters." The peace didn't come easily. Marcus often found himself staring out into the night, the weight of his actions pressing down on him. He had saved Mike, dismantled a criminal empire, and protected a town that didn't even know his name. But the cost of it all lingered in his mind. Every life he'd taken, every decision he'd made, it was all there, etched into his memory like scars that would never fade. One evening, as the sun dipped below the horizon, Marcus and Mike sat on the porch of the shop, watching the fading light. It was a rare moment of calm, the air filled with the hum of cicadas and the distant sound of cars passing through town. "You ever think about leaving?" Mike asked suddenly. Marcus glanced at him. "Leaving where?" "This town." "Everything," Mike said, gesturing to the quiet streets. "You could start over somewhere new." Marcus shook his head. "Running doesn't solve anything, Mike. I learned that the hard way. Sometimes, you have to stay and face what's left." Mike looked thoughtful. "So this is it? This is where we stay?" Marcus smiled faintly. "For now. Until the next storm comes." As the weeks turned into months, life in the town began to return to normal. People whispered about the mysterious vigilante who had taken down Sal Marino, but no one knew his name or face. Marcus preferred it that way. The fewer people who knew, the better. Mike enrolled in school, his bruises and scars fading with time. Under Marcus's guidance, he began to rebuild his life, finding purpose in the stability that had once seemed impossible. For Marcus, the shop became his sanctuary once again. The engines he repaired were a distraction, a way to keep his hands busy and his mind quiet. But every so often, he would catch a glimpse of the shotgun mounted discreetly behind the counter, a reminder that his past was never far behind. One day, a customer, a man in his 40s with a weathered face, stopped by the shop. He handed Marcus a newspaper, his expression curious. "You see this?" the man asked. Marcus took the paper, his eyes narrowing as he read the headline, "Mob Empire Collapses Amid Federal Crackdown." Beneath the headline was a photo of Sal Marino's compound, now swarming with federal agents. The article detailed the arrests, the frozen assets, and the dismantling of the Merino crew. It was a victory, but Marcus felt no joy in it, only relief. The man tilted his head. "You hear about that? Crazy?" Marcus nodded, handing the paper back.
"Yeah.
Crazy." As the man left, Marcus returned to his work, his expression unreadable. The fight was over, but the scars remained. That evening, Marcus and Mike sat on the porch again, watching the stars. The air was cool, the sky clear. "You think they'll ever figure out it was you?" Mike asked. Marcus shook his head. "Doesn't matter if they do. What matters is that they're safe." Mike smiled. "You know, you're kind of like a superhero. Without the cape, I mean." Marcus chuckled softly. "I'm no hero, Mike. I'm just a man who did what needed to be done." Mike nodded, his admiration for Marcus clear. "Still, I'm glad you were here." Marcus didn't reply. He simply looked out at the horizon, his thoughts quiet for the first time in a long while. In the silence, Marcus found something he hadn't felt in years: peace. It wasn't perfect, and it wasn't permanent, but it was enough. For now, it was enough.
Then,